From CAP Radio in Sacramento, this is Insight. I'm Beth Ruyak. California's firefight this year will be boosted by more funding to CAL FIRE and the Office of Emergency Services. That's something the governor is going to talk about in his budget message, which is today at noon. In the midst of this COVID-19 battle, the state has already had to fight more wildfires than last year.
We just ran some numbers from January to May 10th last year. We had 675 wildfires. From January to May 10th this year, we've had 1,135 wildfires. Represents roughly a 60% increase this year compared to last year in the total number of wildfires.
So 26 new fire engines will be added by July, says the governor, as well as Black Hawk helicopters that the governor's long been talking about.
We're not going to walk that back. It's just too important in terms of our mutual aid and public safety in the state of California. I want folks to know those helicopters are now arriving. First one came in October of last year. In fact, it was just used in that red fire up in Tehama County. These Black Hawks are extraordinary. They provide faster suppression capacity, a more robust ability in terms of number of gallons of water that they're able to disperse. They're safer for our personnel in terms of redundancy, double twin turbine engine. I can go on and on with the specs of these.
Well, at noon today, the governor will be talking about budgets. His revised message with analysis begins on your public radio station hosted by CAP Radio at noon. In the COVID-19 battle, meanwhile, you might not personally know someone who's been seriously ill, but we do at CAP Radio. She is Katie Cooper. She's the daughter of our colleague, Lisa Cooper. Katie's in her 30s. She's an actor, singer, and writer. She sometimes steps in here as a receptionist at CAP Radio, and she's been really healthy until this illness that she is still trying to recover from. Katie's on the phone to share her story. And Katie, thanks a lot for talking with me today.
Good morning, Beth. Thank you for having me. I'm happy to share. I think sharing these stories might help some to understand and hopefully help some to feel like they're not alone. I know that when I have heard stories that ring a bell for me, it's like, oh, yes, this was real. This is what happened. You know, it's not just me. And so if I can contribute to that, I'm happy to do it.
So when did this begin and what was your first symptom?
My first symptom was sort of tightness in my chest. That grew into shortness of breath, and that began on March 25th.
And you recognized or you suspected that this was COVID-19? By then, you knew what the symptoms were.
Yeah, at that point, what we were hearing was, fever, cough, and shortness of breath. And if I had not had the phrase shortness of breath as sort of a reference point, I don't know that I would have really paid much attention right at first. But because it was so in the zeitgeist, I noticed it and I was like, okay, so this is happening. And I sort of prepared to hunker down, be in quarantine. I'd already been practicing social distancing for a while at that point, but full isolation and Tylenol, Mucinex, all the, supplements and vitamins and things. And I fully expected to be sick. We all know how to take care of ourselves when we're sick. And then I expected to be well again in about a week, and that is simply not what happened.
When you did feel lousy for that first week, you and your mom were living in the house together. So did you start to change your patterns with each other?
That's right, yeah. So sharing a home with someone who is not exhibiting those symptoms was sort of an added stressor. I was really scared of getting her sick, and so we actually happened to have some rubber gloves that were just like out in the garage. I began using them if I had to go outside of my bedroom or touch anything that she may come in contact with. I was wearing gloves. I was spraying everything with vodka water and or hydrogen peroxide. We were very careful. As much as we could, we live in a house that's not entirely conducive. You might run into each other in the hallway, and there's some shuffling that has to happen. So we were very careful, and mostly we were able to really keep that distance as well by, I tried to stay just in my bedroom. And if I had to go out, into the bathroom, into the kitchen, I was really, really trying to be very conscious. Mm. And I also really sort of fixated on a few things like dishes. I don't know why in my head at that time, dirty dishes was good, how she was going to get it. That is totally irrational. Dishes over anything else is probably not true, but in my state, that was the thing that I could do, I guess, to try and keep her safe. So I did it.
Well, from what I understand, you moved Katie into this cycle of feeling better for a few days, and then you would have a day where you felt lousy and then feel better and lousy. But then over time, I think the reason I really wanted everybody to hear this story is that you started to realize you were struggling psychologically, that the anxiety of the length of this was really becoming part of the debilitating nature of its own. Would you talk more about that?
Absolutely. It was very real, and not only the duration, though that is definitely a piece of it, but the nature of it, like you said, I would have maybe a couple of days of sort of stasis, and then 2 days of starting to feel better, and then one day that was really a drawback, and I really felt even worse, and then it would sort of balance out again. And so every time the days of feeling better would come on, you think, okay, well, here it is. So maybe I was starting to get better and then I overdid it. So I really need to make sure I don't overdo it this time. So I continue to get better, but it never takes. It kept pulling me backwards again. And so it was a really long time. I was fully sick for 35 days, and I am still at this point, I don't even know how many days anymore, but from March 25th, I am still not fully recovered, though I do feel I am in recovery rather than being ill, which is sort of an ineffable difference, but it was a shift that was very real to me when I felt it.
Katie, can I ask how the night times were for you?
Night times were rough. My symptoms were worse in the evenings. They would come on. I would start feeling worse usually around 4 o'clock or 5 o'clock in the afternoon, evening, and so the onset of like feeling worse physically was very much a pattern, but. Also, around week two, during the second week, I was feeling like I should be getting better by now. Now at this point, I'm hearing that there are a lot of cases where it is more like 2 weeks to the crest rather than 1 week and then a week of getting better. But at that point, I really felt like, why am I not healing yet? And so there was a lot of anxiety, and that was also always worse at night, and especially at bedtime, around going to bed, around going to sleep, I had a lot of anxiety about going to bed and staying there, not waking up. That fear was a little bit constant, but definitely consistent when I was getting ready for bed.
Do you mean, Katie, when you mean staying in bed, do you mean you were afraid that you might die in your sleep?
I was afraid that I might die in my sleep, and there were times when beyond that I was convinced of it. Yeah.
Was that because the shortness of breath was so bad?
Shortness of breath and trouble breathing. There were times when I can't tell if I was actually asleep at this point or still trying to go to sleep, but I can remember being in my bed and waking with a gasp. And so that sensation combined with some of the stories that had come out, by that point I was on a full news block. I couldn't handle any news at all. But some of those stories from earlier on had stuck with me. And so, yeah, it felt like if I am not consciously, intentionally breathing, I might stop. It might just be too hard for my body to do automatically. I don't know how realistic that is looking back with a rational brain, but that was very much my reality at the time. And the fact that, I mean, there was evidence for it. My struggle to breathe while I was laying down was greater, and enough so to have awakened me. So that fear was very real. It was very much always at least bubbling in the back of my mind, and a lot of times it really came to the fore, and that fear really crested for me at the 2 week mark. There was one night that I was convinced I would die if I went to sleep, and so for hours and hours I stood in the bathroom staring at myself in the mirror to make sure I was still real and make sure I was still there. I turned the light on. I stared at myself in the mirror. I tried to focus on different features. You hear in a panic attack that grounding yourself with your senses can help. And I don't know if I was doing that intentionally or intuitively, or if it was very different experience of reality and of my body than I had ever experienced before. So maybe trying to anchor myself down into my body and stay there, I don't know. But there was a thought in my head at that time that if I go into distress while I'm standing here in the bathroom, not only am I more comfortable here than in bed, but if I collapse, our house is arranged such that the bathroom is the next door room to my mom's bedroom. And it was a very real thought to me that if I collapsed in here, she'll hear me. And if I go into distress in my bed, no one will know. So I stayed there for hours. And eventually the dog woke my mom up. And she came in and asked me what was going on. And she stayed up with me for the rest of that night. It was about 7:30 in the morning before I could finally relax and get some rest. And that was the most trying night of my entire life.
If you're just joining us, I'm talking with Katie Cooper of Sacramento. She's describing her experience with COVID-19. It was clinically diagnosed. And Katie, we need to explain this. You did not have a swab test available to you at the beginning, so the diagnosis came through your communication with your doctor, correct?
That's correct, yeah. I got in touch with my doctor about the end of the first week that I was ill. As I said earlier, when I first felt it coming on, I sort of felt like, okay, get prepared. We're going to take care of this and it's going to be fine. And then about the end of the first week when I expected to start feeling better and I didn't, I reached out to my doctor. And we had a phone appointment and we were in regular contact. I don't know about constant contact, but just about every few days to check in and, make sure I'm still doing the right things and to check on, it's been another it's been another week and I'm still not getting better. Is this normal? And also having to temper those questions with, you know, do we know if this is normal yet? What information is available to even, you know, can we answer these questions? She took excellent care of me, and we made a plan. We continued with that plan after the that Wednesday night, which was the worst of it. I got back in touch with her that next day, and she prescribed me a medication for anxiety and insomnia, and she told me to take it at bedtime and as needed if I needed it during other times of the day. And that was really a saving grace.
Hey, Katie, was there ever a time that there was discussion about you being in the hospital?
There was not. The plan had been and remained staying at home, taking care with all of the tools that we have. There didn't come a time for sort of physical care by a provider until the fifth week, or at the end of the fifth week. So,
and I'm going to jump in here and just fast track and let everybody know that you did develop bronchitis as a secondary infection. But I want to advance us to say it's now been 50 days by the calendar. You're still not 100%. So just in the final little bit of time we have, to what degree do you feel at this point like yourself again?
Emotionally, I feel very much back to myself. I'm still processing a lot of what happened and sort of realizing in how I frame this for myself as I navigate it as a trauma, not just an illness. So there's a lot of work to be done there.
Yeah.
But I feel like a human. I feel like myself. My mom has said, "You're back. You were gone and you're back."
Well, we're going to leave it right there, Katie.
Yeah.
And I'm just so glad. We're all glad here to cheer you on and know that you are back. I can hear it in your voice. And we look forward to seeing you again sometime at CAP Radio. But a lot of big hugs around you, okay?
Thank you so much, Beth. And big love to my mom and CAP Radio. She's spent her whole career there, and I'm so proud of her. So I'm feeling lucky to be a part of that as well.
That's Katie Cooper talking about her experience with COVID-19. You're listening to Insight on your NPR station, CAP Radio.